Welcome to the latest podcast of IDS 110, Introduction to Computing at UC Berkeley with instructor Americ Azevedo. The course will be taking you on a journey into computing, its vast potential, and how it's shaping our culture. You can also watch video of this course live Mondays, Wednesdays, and Fridays, 4 to 5 p.m. Pacific Standard Time, and on demand anytime by visiting webcast.berkeley.edu/courses. Now let's begin.
How many people here have been doing, are familiar with what podcasting is? Not too many. Really? You don't know what podcasting is? How many people here know what an iPod is? How many people here know what an MP3 player is? How many people really know that there's not that much difference between an iPod and an MP3 player except marketing? Yeah. I'm sorry, Apple. All right. Okay. Podcasting is spreading throughout the world as an alternative to live radio. So imagine that on your MP3 player or your iPod device, you go to the computer and you know you with an MP3 or an player or an iPod, you plug into the computer, you go to iTunes, and usually you can then synchronize what's in iTunes with what's on your iPod or your MP3 player. With podcasting, you include the universe not just of MP3 files from your CDs and from your favorite ripped-off songs and all that kind of stuff. But you can actually have radio feeds of live radio programs. So the university now is starting to experiment with taking public relations programs and doing audio feeds to go out podcast. Various radio stations are doing this now. Not only radio stations, but places on the internet such as newspapers. Like, for instance, a newspaper that I would point out to is SF Gate. So if you go to sfgate.com, and you're looking at SF Gate, you'll see that for a while, I don't know if they have it now, yeah, they have this little thing called resources RSS feeds. And podcasting integrates RSS feeds with your player. And so by Wednesday, I'll have a small instruction sheet. But basically, if you have, how many people here have MP3 players? Put the camera on the students. Raise it again. How many people here have MP3 players? Okay. How many people here have iPods? Okay. So all of you will then be able to go on to one of the sites we have and locate the feed for a webcast, and you probably can go to start off with. The easy way is just to go to webcast. Berkeley.edu, and then you locate courses, and you will find that IDS 110. I'm sorry, this is so disorganized. This is happening so fast, I can barely catch up to this situation. And you'll see some instructions here about the beta, and then you can try it now. You go in here, and that part doesn't work too well yet. Excuse me. But there will be more instructions in here, and then you can figure out how to do this. And this is the actual link, the RSS feed that you put into your subscription for your podcast. And I will include more information on it on Wednesday, which will be a little more coherent. I can do it, but I can't quite explain it because I got the links buried somewhere else at this point to do it. But Purdue's setting it up, and so we're the first class to try this kind of thing. Welcome. Sit close. I can't see your faces back there too well. Next time, sit close. Want to know you. Yeah. We need to be able to make contact. I've been accused of having a class that's too virtual. This semester I'm working on eliminating virtuality by using virtuality. You can be on camera. Actually, it is turning into television. It's an amalgamation of television and computing. Your research project, you know, and this is real time, yeah, being here. Now, you know what I'm doing here is I'm using some PowerPoint tricks. These are called animations in PowerPoint, and maybe you might play with them when you're playing with PowerPoint in your labs this week. So you can make the letters come up from the side. You can have them come from the front. You can have them fade in, fade out, do all these old tricks. Now, look at that square. It's in terrible shape, isn't it? So at this point, I got to fix that poor guy. I got to move him. Oh, maybe I can rotate him. There. Okay. See? And all this stuff you can do with these little buttons down here. And, you know, the best way to learn how to do these kinds of things is to sit in the lab and play with them. I mean, that's it. I mean, it's harder to read the manual learning to do PowerPoint than to play with it and talk to other people who know some tricks. There. Now it looks much better. Sit close to the front and all that stuff. Why are computers so important? Because computers augment human intelligence. Back in the early 60s, there was somebody named Doug Engelbart that worked at RSI, Stanford Research Institute, and he spent most of his life figuring out ways to try to augment human intelligence. I will try to get a movie or a clip of his demonstration of one of his most famous augmentation experiments. Does anybody know what Doug Engelbart is really famous for? The invention of the mouse. The mouse was a huge step in augmenting human intelligence. Remember, that's the 60s. Computers are bulky, but Engelbart has enough presence of mind to realize that computing power is doubling every 18 months or so. So they're going to get cheaper, they're going to get smaller. As they get cheaper and smaller, the vision that started coming to him and other people was, there's going to be a computer on everybody's desk, and it's going to be a tool to augment my and your intelligence. At the same time, the Internet's starting to come in experimental ways because of funding from ARPA. And then not only do you have this tool, but suppose you start connecting them together. Then you start achieving collaboration, right? The theme for the research project that's going to happen this semester is about collaboration, computing, and networks. So it's a very broad set of phenomena that have been occurring for the past, you know, 30 years. 10 years ago, almost to this day, a very famous event happened. What was that event? That's right, the Netscape IPO. People found out they could get rich by investing in the Internet. So it generated two phenomena. Number one, the Internet must be serious because the IPO, you know, just exploded in value overnight. And number two, because people started taking it seriously, newspapers started tracking it, and people started wondering, wow, I can see images, not just letters on my computer screen. And that was very exciting. And it's about augmenting human intelligence. Some people want to replace human intelligence. This morning I went to the Internet and I found out that the Japanese are now implementing an affordable robot that will be on sale mid-September that's small, speaks 10,000 words, and can recognize 10 human faces. It is designed to be a babysitting assistant for your parents. That is, for you, babysitting your old parents. Why? Anybody know why? Yes? Pardon me? That's right. The baby boomers are getting old, and Japan doesn't have enough young people replacing. You know, there's not enough replacement of young people. The population growth is so slow that there's a shortage of people to pay attention to their parents. So the solution is robotics. That's one of the solutions that's emerging out of this. It's quite fascinating. And, I'll maybe point you to some of these phenomena. But that's replacing human intelligence. And there's a lot of, you know, that's been a dream for a long time. I think it's called artificial intelligence, right? Opens new dimensions of collaboration. Now, How many people here have been using MySpace.com? You know, it's become such a media splash. Every day now I'm reading newspaper stories about MySpace.com. It's part of a phenomenon referred to as social networking. Earlier it was referred to as collaboration. Other people used to call it virtual reality or, you know, virtual communities. But the flavor changes. What's popular changes. But the thing is the same. It's collaboration, but now it's collaboration in a very rich media environment. Again, that's one of the things I want to have us look at while we're doing this semester. And it generates a global nervous system. Now, anybody can think of an example of what a global nervous system case might be? There's lots of them, aren't there? What happened in Iraq when people had their head cut off? It was broadcast on the internet. And people, whether they liked it or not, some people, out of just sheer delight in seeing something gory, went to those sites to see those beheadings. That has an effect on people. Number one, I think it's a terrible thing for children to see that kind of phenomena. Number two, it humanizes war in ways we've never dreamed of before. You can't romanticize war when you get to see those kinds of things and it's not sanitized somewhere else. So it alters the scope of war. But not only has it altered war, how about the last election? Didn't both sides use blogs, the internet? Tremendous amounts of effort at raising money and doing other things using the internet. But other things, too, that are much more useful than that. We have incredible systems in place for tracking the nervous system, tracking the environment of the entire Earth, modeling the Earth, detecting anomalies in the environment. That's part of a global nervous system, too. So there's tremendous dimensions to this. So tremendous numbers of things we can look at. What's my teaching philosophy? I once got a letter about 15 years ago from one of my teachers, and he quoted Martin Heidegger to me because he knew I was interested in Heidegger's philosophy. Basically, you can see what it is. Teaching is more difficult than learning because what teaching calls for is this, to let learn. The hardest thing in the world when you're a teacher is to let your students learn on their own. Most of us still want to be parents, and we're supposed to feed it to you. But that's not teaching, that's training. So in your struggle to learn things, you own the knowledge. You know, the lab is going to be a place where you learn a lot. I'm going to keep encouraging dialogue here. I know that half of you probably won't show up if you find this thing on webcast, but those who do show up will have a more quality interaction because there's things we can do in person that we cannot do online. Plus, I may have to shut off the webcast periodically to show clips of movies and other things to avoid copyright infringement problems, that kind of stuff. So, you know, all I can tell you is I'm learning along with you because the field is changing phenomenally fast. My teaching style is non-sequential. Holographic means I tend to see everything in large chunks holistically. And so for people who have very sequential minds, which are the ones who will do very well in the JavaScript section of this course because, you know, you follow instructions one after the other. That's a sequential mind. Those of us who have non-sequential minds will probably be more comfortable with my approach. I may appear chaotic. I apologize for that. But I just simply cover a tremendous amount of information in short periods of time. It's very useful in certain situations, not so useful in others. Useful when I was running companies because then I had to track things at multiple levels. And it's like sorting out the pieces of a jigsaw puzzle. But we'll try to make it not too complex for you. My style is Socratic, almost impossible in a large class like this, but I do encourage you to sit nearby. And therefore, I can know your names, like yours. What's your name?
Paul.
Paul. See, that's Paul right there. Camera on Paul. your name?
Cha-Chan.
Cha-Chan?
Cha-Chan.
Chan-Chan. No.
Cha-Chan.
Okay. We may do Jerry Springer approach sometimes, and just I've been offered extra mics. We can walk around and talk to people. How shall we proceed? We'll have lectures. The lectures are not going to be just about me. This semester, I'm calling myself course producer. What does that mean? That means that I'm inviting people who know more about things than I do to come here and talk about some of these things in this very complex world. Like the podmaster, as I call him, Obi. I'm going to invite him here to talk. And then I'll invite other folks. I have, and I'll tell you more about them later. E-lectures, I do some of those. Those are strictly electronic lectures. Sometimes I relegate e-lectures to Fridays. Why Friday? Well, this class meets at 4 o'clock in the afternoon, and I've been told about 100 times now, this is an awful hour for this class. Why would anybody want to come to IDS 110 at 4 o'clock in the afternoon? Well, the answer is nobody. But not even me. I don't like 4 o'clock in the afternoon. That's not my best hour for doing a class. But this is what we got, you know. And so sometimes I'll push an e-lecture into Fridays so that we can not have a lecture. If more of you show up during Mondays and Wednesdays, I will be justified in having more e-lectures. That kind of thing. All right? That's the deal. Regular lectures like this. Dialogue lectures means now that we have a camera, we put you on camera back and forth, you know, you become a star too. Now we can talk. We can talk. I mean, I want you to represent your knowledge too. Sometimes during periods like that, we really get to know people. Sometimes we issue bonus points for people who actually show signs of life and intelligence out there. You know, one of my arguments about artificial intelligence is that it exists at Cal. It's called the multiple choice test. There's no way of knowing whether or not there's an intelligent life form on the other side. Computers can do just as well as human beings on multiple choice tests. Memory is also the same thing. Computers are better at memory than human beings. Remember that. It might be part of one of your exams. Okay? Labs. Labs are the heart of what you do in terms of learning how to work with JavaScript. This is the lab. Also with HTML, you know, the building websites. It's not that hard to start creating a website, but the JavaScript will be challenging. Traditionally at IDS 110, we squeezed all the JavaScript into the middle part of the class and gave people a nervous breakdown during that middle, and gave them a midterm exam, and half the people would just go into total depression. And now, this semester, we're just going to spread it out through the whole semester and ease the stress through the semester. So the lab will have more of a kind of a flowing quality at the same time. What this slide didn't represent very well is that we are doing a research assignment. That's part of what we got through the Mellon Grant Foundation. The players are the producer, me. I'm also the lecturer, the head GSI. The GSI's guest speakers, and you, right? Put the picture back on them. You, you're a very important part of the players. What's our work? Learn how to play with computers, and I do mean play with computers. Most of the advances in computing technology were done by nerds who played with computers. You too can be a nerd. There's nothing that hard about being a nerd. A nerd is nothing but somebody who expresses some curiosity about what these things can do. Here's a nerdy thing. The people in the projection room gave me this thing because they found I was doing a PowerPoint. They said that there's this wireless device here now attached to my computer, and if I push a button, I can move the PowerPoint up and down. Let's see if it works. I've never done that before. See, this was a nerd moment. Wow. And nerds, you know, they just start playing with the stuff because they just love to play with it. God, I'm so stunned. I can't believe this works the first time. Usually it doesn't work. Please tell the people over in Educational Technology Services that I'm totally impressed. Okay, so we're going to learn how to play with computers. And that's how I've learned computers all my life. I play. I don't know anything about computers. I played with computers. I graduated from college with a philosophy degree. I couldn't get a job. I took a temporary job, and somebody said, do you know logic? I said, yeah, I studied logic. He says, You know anything about computers? Yeah, yeah. Well, I built one when I was a kid, but it was an analog machine. It doesn't work like yours. Good enough. And then they hired me. And I didn't know how to program. So they gave me a book and the use of a compiler, and I just started playing with it. Never had a course. Just hacked my way through it. So the whole experience for people like me, and I'm not even a real nerd, is just hacking my way through it. And I hacked my way through IDS 110 semester after semester, doing one experiment after another. This time, we're on the radio. Okay, we're being podcast, and it'll be preserved. And by the end of this week, you will know how to get this thing on your MP3 player. So I'm excited about that. I'm not sure if it's going to work or not, but I know we'll get there, because nerds always get there. That's the thing about nerds. They find a way. It's like engineering. This class is sponsored by the engineering department. I've gotten to know a lot of engineers. What you have to admire about engineers is that there's no problem you can't solve if you give it enough time and attention. Right? Nanotechnology. You can make little tools which are just one atom thick now. You can engineer anything. So you're going to learn how to play with computers. That's the first thing. If you learn how to play with computers, your anxiety goes down, and you just start playing around with this stuff, and you feel so cool. Okay. HTML. Not that hard to begin to do your web page. With 4 or 5 tags, you can build a web page. If you have anxiety, believe me, you will be able to do one very easily. The instructions are here in, what is this? The cookbook. It's nothing but a cookbook. Okay. JavaScript. That is programming. What's the difference? HTML tells you how to format the page. JavaScript is used in here because it gives you a feeling for what programming. What is programming? Programming is writing a set of statements that are instructions that tell this thing, which has no mind of its own, what to do. The instructions are followed one after the other. And if they're done right and fit all the protocols and all the things that the machine needs to know and the other sub-programs and layers need to understand, it'll execute what you want. And programs are mindless. They don't have any mental content. They have no intelligence in them except yours. You're downloading your intelligence into the computer using a program. You download your intelligence into the computer using HTML. You download your intelligence into the computer uploading files and other things into the computing realm. And somehow, the Internet is becoming this huge, vast realm of intelligence, which we refer to as collaborative systems. So we're going to look at collaborative systems, several of them this semester, the history of computing, and what I refer to as cultures of computing. And there's many cultures. There's cultures of nerds, and there's MySpace, right? MySpace.com, you're smiling. I wish we could get that lady's smile back there. What's your name?
Deja.
Deja, as in deja vu? Okay, Deja up there. I don't think we can get her, can we? See, a little robot can't get you, so you're safe. So there's cultures of computing on many levels. And the impact on society at large. What happens to Deja when she spends 8 hours a day inside of MySpace? Some of the newspaper commentators are very worried about that. They think that this is going to generate a culture of people who are just living inside a fantasy land. As if going to your office and having meetings all day long is in a fantasy land, too. As if being a student isn't a fantasy land. I don't know. Where's fantasy? Where's reality? There are some profound questions. Some people make their living in MySpace. Are you not making your living in MySpace? Are you one of those? Okay. That's right. So other people live inside of Instant Messenger, right? Okay, that's another culture of computing. How many people here are using Instant Messenger? Give a shot there. Look at that. Okay, look at that. Look, the robot is really having a fun time. I like this guy. God, he's really sweet. Could you point down? Can you point down? Oh my God. We have to give it a name. He's our mascot. Toby. Okay, Toby. I love you. Okay. Like I said, I'm hacking my way through IDS 110. And this semester and the other previous semesters, I've always tried to make it work. I looked at my professor reviews. I've given up. I give up. There's no way to please everybody. I'm just going to do whatever I want to do. I'm going to have fun. Okay? Okay. Impact on our beings. Impact on our beings is a very subtle and very profound aspect of computing. What happens when people spend hours a day looking at machines? They've done studies. Depression. That's one of the worst factors. Depression. Your body gets distorted. It's no accident. Oh God. Okay. See if I can do this. Give me something. Okay. Socrates at Berkeley. No, that's so. Yes, right. I need a little more here. Wait a minute. Hackers are never right the first time. That's the other thing about hacking that's really fun. You know, you never get it right the first time. But if you do it often enough, you'll get there. And that's what hacking's about. Okay, that's what's happened to us. You know, we started out as apes, became an upright creature, noble and powerful, able to use our body and mind, totally in touch with our environment, and eventually started getting captivated and captured by our machines. And the machines got heavier, but eventually we knew we didn't have to use our bodies anymore, and then we're back. And I go to offices and I see people in that pose. You know, that pose is usually the sign of somebody who's making a lot of money. The people who make the most money nowadays, other than deal makers in Wall Street, tend to sit like that. I go to offices and people are emailing each other. Now, back to this instant messenger thing. How many people here have used as many as 5 instant messenger windows all at once? Confess. Okay, Hobie. Look at that, 5. Anybody go up to 6? 7. How many can you go to? 10? All right. How many people have used it? Period. A lot. How many people use Instant Messenger to communicate to people in your dorm or your own home? That's what the office is like now. I see people sending emails to each other in the same office. But it wouldn't be so bad if it was just shipping a document in and out, but it gets bad because they're having arguments, marital disputes, you know, inter-office rivalry and political battles on the email. I go visiting one guy, and he said, oh, God, this guy, we're going to have to send him an email here and zap him and carbon copy everybody and then blind carbon copy his supervisor. Okay, you know, this kind of stuff. So there's profound effect on us. Okay, let's get back here to serious work again. All right, I got to use my nerd device. Oop. Is that the right direction? Yes, it is. Okay. It's okay. So we got guest lectures, research projects. We got website creation and development. You're going to be doing that. And, you know, the website creation and development is kind of like the techie nerdy part of this whole thing. But you will be doing it simultaneously while learning how to do a web page, how to, you know, you just practice. Instead of practicing on something totally meaningless, which is what we usually do, practice on something that might have some meaning to somebody, and that's the research project. So you learn basically what you're doing, and this is not too well described in the slides, what you're doing is learning how to use these tools to communicate a meaningful message out into the world. Remember, whatever you put on the web, everybody in the world can see, not just your friends and your parents. Everybody in the world can see. So you're publishing. All of us are publishers now. You learn programming concepts. You learn what's new. And you play around testing collaborative tools, computing and life. This is life. Okay. Wrong direction. Problem with these nerdy things. Okay, the research project is titled Collaboration, Networks, and Computing. I will spend some more time on Wednesday and maybe Friday explicating that. And also, those of you I can hear, we can dialogue, you can ask me questions, and that'll help refine the scope of the project, and I'll show you the process. We're going to have guests, some of whom are actually fairly famous. Herbert Dreyfuss. How many people know who Herbert Dreyfuss is? Who is he? That's right. The author of our book will be showing up. He's always tickled pink when I assign it for IDS 110. And, you know, it's an important book. So, and also, okay, so, and Yehuda Kalei, he's a professor of architecture here at Cal. He's developed a software environment called The Place, which is suspiciously like myspace.com, except it's more oriented toward academic purposes. William Kastenberg is a professor of nuclear engineering. Here he's going to talk about networks and network phenomena, which is important. Gérard Lanier, anybody know who he is? He's the inventor of the term virtual reality. Remember those virtual reality masks and that stuff from some years ago, 10, 15 years ago? Lanier developed the virtual reality concept. Lanier also involved himself in a massive project called the Teleimmersion, where they were developing application for Internet 2, where you'd have one room here, a room somewhere else, 25 cameras pointed at you on this side, 25 cameras on the other side, and you'd get the feeling of being inside each other's rooms. And the detail is that you could see each other looking at each other's eyeballs. What's your name? Paul. Okay, Toby, Paul. Yeah, so then Paul and I could see, and Paul could be in Minnesota, and we could see each other as if we're looking at each other. Tim Lundin, he's one of the pioneers in the field of collaborative systems. He helped program what was used last semester and the semester before, the Cal Matrix. We're reconverting the Cal Matrix. This semester there's no Cal Matrix right now, and we're turning it into a new Cal Matrix that'll be a social networking site to go head-to-head against MySpace. So we're going to have a private MySpace inside of Berkeley, hopefully within 2 or 3 weeks. Yeah. Yeah, we just, you know, it's just another nerdy thing to do. I mean, get involved in this. Everybody always asks about grades. Keep changing this all the time. All I can tell you about grades is that no system works. But this breaks the points scale. Last semester we only had one midterm. This semester we have two midterms. We put another midterm back to make it a little more fair. We're splitting up the final project into two components, the technical and the research assignments. We're still hacking with the TAs about how to define that structure. But that's the fundamental thing. And let's see. Yes, it's the wrong way. Exam building. In the past 2 years, 3 years, I've had students write exams, questions. This semester, I don't know if we're doing that or not. I'm developing a different procedure where the GSIs are going to be very much intimately involved in either one of two things, writing the exam questions or asking the students for exam questions and picking out the best ones to submit for the exam. Last semester and the semester before, the JavaScript exam was designed by Nicholas Cravatta out of a set of 300 questions. And so you could see all the questions and the answers before the exam. That was great, except that I found out that some people have photographic memories, and they memorized all the answers in a matter of a day. And you can't compete with that. So we're not going to use those questions. We're going to make new questions for JavaScript. So those of you who are memorizing those right now and got it from your fraternity or sorority, give up. There's no hope. No hope. You've entered Dante's Inferno. Remember what it says at the entrance to the Inferno, forsake all hope, ye who enter. Okay. Some of the questions I'm submitting to the head GSI myself. So I'm going to submit a question on each lecture that I give myself to the head GSI on each lecture. There will be a question submitted on today's stuff. Maybe it'll be, what's the name of our mascot? Hey, Toby, how you doing? Oh, you know, you're better than a dog. Oh, look at this. Isn't he sweet? Your robots can be fuzzy. Okay, 15, and since the questions are multiple choice, there's 30 questions per each one of the exams, at least the first two exams. The first 15, there will be 15 questions based on lectures, 15 questions based on the lab. Oop, wrong way again. These grading guidelines. I should have music. Next time we need music. Okay. These are guidelines. They're not set in stone. I have people email and argue with me over one single point, and I have to keep saying it's a guideline not set in stone. Even though the guidelines exist, the GSI has the right to kind of like, you know, go back and forth a little bit so we don't give away too many points. The problem is I don't want to have too many A's because it would look like great inflation. Okay, so it seems like that's a fair number. So far this has worked out. But if everybody's really brilliant, you know, you're all totally brilliant, we'll go over 32%. If everybody's really stupid, we can go under 20% for the A's. Or maybe have no A's. Never happens. Okay? These guidelines will be applied at the GSI discretion. Course online environments has been changing. Okay, these are live links. This environment which I was using, I'm deactivating. Whoop. Excuse me. Oh, no. Give me back. Okay, this environment here, the first one, the one with the monkey and the human being turning back into a monkey, that's where socrates.berkeley.edu is. You can go to that one. Actually, if you go to that one, you get everything you need. Can't find my mouse. Okay, you can get everything you need by going to that one. And the second one, B-Space, is the online space. How many people have been getting my online emails? Okay, those are coming from B-Space. That's another experimental environment for collaboration being developed by Educational Technology here. And we're one of the first classes to utilize that system. So it looks like it's working well enough that I'm starting to migrate all our stuff over there. OCF is the Open Computing Facility. It's the Open Computing Facility. Usually, traditionally, we use the Unix accounts for your websites. The problem with Unix accounts in the lab, even though we've asked for them just in case OCF doesn't work, is that the Unix accounts you lose at the end of the semester. And half the students go, can I keep my Unix account? And say, no, and your website's gone. OCF accounts you get to keep as long as you're a student at Cal. So it's not. How many people here are sophomores or freshmen? Sophomores or freshmen? Hey, Toby. Okay, so all of you, and some people here are juniors. Okay, and how many people here are seniors? Okay, and how many people here are none of those? All right, so the thing is, you'll be able to keep your account. And this is the first time we've used OCF. So we're developing a procedure, and we'll get a little lecture on that this week, too. There is a system called webfiles.berkeley.edu. You can go to that, webfiles.berkeley.edu. It allows you to store up to 50 megabytes of files on the Internet. I recommend that highly in backing up your files and moving them up and down between one computer and another. It's very convenient. CalMatrix we've been using, but right now it's in limbo because we're reprogramming it. CourseWeb we were using a lot before, and it's still there to maintain the syllabus, but you can get into CourseWeb using B-Space or socrates.berkeley.edu. Migrations. What is a migration? A migration is something we often have to do these days. I'm not talking about migrating to Asia or migrating to Oregon or Mexico from California because California is too full of earthquakes or something like that. I'm talking about migrating between software environments. So this is when we go from one software environment to another, we're migrating. Not always easy because of compatibility issues, learning how to use new environments, and the time it takes to learn something new. So despite my best efforts, we're doing some migrations now. We're partly migrating into podcasts. We're migrating out of CourseWeb into B-Space, doing all that kind of stuff. Now, need that. Hold on. There we are. Okay, any questions? Yes. That's a very good question. What's going to happen to the people on the wait list? There are right now 44 people on the wait list. Traditionally, don't go away yet. Traditionally, we lose about 10% of the people. So there's 200 who are formally registered. So we'll probably have 20 spaces. Now, what to do with the extra 20? I've talked to my administrator about that. And she says, well, the GSIs could let you in if you can find the GSI to let you into the lab. So I'm going to talk to the GSIs about that. It's a lot of pressure. I'm not getting funding right now to open up another lab section. So that's our problem. If you can get in, then I'll let you in, that kind of thing. Yeah, that's it. Okay, see you on Wednesday. On Wednesday, we'll talk about other stuff. Bye-bye.
This brings to a close the latest class of IDS 110 with Americ Azevedo, your instructor and guide through the world of computing, who bids you adieu from the UC Berkeley campus and cyberspace.